The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. I'm Sam Livingston, and I will be your guest host for today's radio show. How would you describe the year 2020? It's almost impossible to use a description that is not an understatement. I think we'd all agree that the past 12 months have been packed with events that usually happen, you know, every few decades, even every few centuries, some events that have never happened before. We had an impeachment of the President of the United States. We've had a global pandemic. We have been introduced to terms we've never heard before. Social distancing has become a big buzzword. We've seen travel bans, lockdowns, riots. We've seen autonomous zones spring up in American cities. We've seen intense wildfires. We've seen election fraud on a scale that we have never seen before. In this episode, we're going to review the year 2020, the year that upended everything. And I've been going through these events, working to put together a montage, a super montage that will play on a future program before the year is out. But this program, I just want to go through most of these major events. There are so many, it will be hard to cover. But the point that I want to get across to you is that these events are intensifying. They are happening with greater frequency. They are getting bigger. They are becoming more dramatic. The world is shaking. We have seen that happen this year. Consider how many unusual things have now been sold to us as the new normal. And take a critical look at your world. Do you honestly think that these things are repairable? Do you think there will be unity in the United States after what we've seen this year? Do you think the government can really stop the spread of an infectious disease, that the government can pay your incomes, that the government can protect you? On one hand, they want to defund the police, but on the other hand, they have to use the police to enforce their radical communist, disease response. A few prophecies that you can look at to really emphasize, to really hit home that these are the last days. I'd encourage you to read 2 Timothy 3 and verses 1 through 7. This know also that in the last days, perilous times shall come. Other translations have the word perilous there as strenuous or stressful. In these last days, there will be great times of stress. And it goes on to list the qualities that we'll see in people. Despisers of those that are good, traitors, heady, high-minded, without natural affection, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy. We have seen these qualities on display, on full display this year. Verse 7, it says, they are ever learning and never able to come to the knowledge of the truth. Romans 1 says that there will be inventors of evil things. Have we seen evil on a new level in these past few years? Now, these verses describe a world that clearly is not God's world. Look at the fruits of this world. This is not a world that lives in fear of God, and these are the fruits, curses. You can read that in Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28. One article that I want to refer you to throughout this program is titled, it's a reprint article from The Trumpet. It's titled, Are We Living in the Last Days? And you can get that when you click the library tab on thetrumpet.com. And again, that goes through the prophecies that describe the events that you are seeing on your screen today. We are seeing not just those qualities that were described in 2 Timothy 3, but we're seeing very specific prophecies, prophecies about nations and alliances, specific leaders. These events show that we're living in the time just before Christ's return. And that is the great hope in these events. As stressful and as perilous as these events are, they are exciting because of what it's leading to. We've seen the Psalm 83 alliance take shape in more prominent ways. We've seen France intervening in Lebanon. These peace deals with the United States or brokered by the United States, helping those nations to align. We've seen the Holy Roman Empire become more emboldened, and that, as we've said before, will be forged in crisis. We're getting a glimpse of America and Britain coming under siege, and we are experiencing the times of the Gentiles. This year has been dominated by a disease that came out of China, and the United States has been engaged in, people won't admit it, but these are acts of war. That is what we're witnessing, and it's fulfilling Bible prophecy. So I'm going to spend the entire program today going through the events of this year. And there obviously isn't time to go into a lot of detail, but I think the frequency and the intensity of these events and just hearing them all grouped together, I hope that will be impactful for you, the listener. Well, going all the way back to January of this year, it feels like that could have been a decade ago. To start off the year, the Iranian-backed militias attacked United States citizens in Iraq. The U.S. retaliated with a rocket strike, and then the U.S. embassy in Baghdad came under fire. After that, President Donald Trump gave the nod to assassinate Iran's terrorist mastermind, Qasem Soleimani. Soleimani is killed in a drone strike, and very odd following his death was that the Western media appeared to mourn his death.
He was a war hero.
Qasem Soleimani was no ordinary general. In Iran, he was a national hero.
He's regarded as personally incredibly brave. The troops love him.
I was trying to think of somebody, and I was thinking of De Gaulle.
When you go back and listen to the way they were talking after that assassination, that really set the tone for what would be a crazy year from the mainstream media. After Soleimani's death, Tehran threatened a strong retaliation. What ended up happening was they fired a few missiles near a U.S. base, and they thought the United States was firing back, and they accidentally shot down a passenger jet, killing everyone on board. And this was already the alarm bells going. This was the start of World War III. January of this year, Australia experienced record wildfires. And then after those fires abated, flooding came in. This is a quote from thetrumpet.com. It says, the fires, which began in September of 2019, have burned over 27 million acres, destroyed 3,000 homes, and killed an estimated 1 billion animals. But suddenly and almost without warning, the situation changed. Many of the same parts of the country that suffered through devastating fires are now enduring flooding and record-setting rainfall. All of the nations of Israel being hit by these curses. It's in Amos that says you'll experience drought and fire in parts of your country and flooding in another. Also in January, we experienced the royal abdication. Harry and Meghan decided they no longer wanted to be a part of the royal family. The Queen made that decision formal, and they were relinquished of their royal roles and titles. I believe they moved to Los Angeles as well. No longer receive public funds from the UK government, no longer allowed to formally represent the royal family. I believe that was, we turned or coined that as Megxit at the time. It was a hard break. And we have seen, again, just like what happened in 2017, we have seen that royal family continue its decline. January 15th and 16th, Nancy Pelosi, after weeks of delay, makes a show out of walking the articles of impeachment over to the Republican-controlled Senate. And this kicked off weeks of what was a very pointless trial into the phone call that President Trump had with the Ukrainian president back in the summer of 2019. Nancy Pelosi, if you'll recall, she had to, I think she signed each letter of her name with a different pen, and then she handed out those pens to all of her accomplices around her, and then they had to slow walk the articles and make a big show out of it as they walked it over to the Senate chamber. So bear in mind what's happening right now in China. There's a disease that's beginning to spread, and the United States is engrossed in these shenanigans, this attempt to take down President Trump. January 16th, the U.S. has its first confirmed case of the Wuhan flu, what we now know as COVID-19. In just a few days, the nation of China imposes a domestic travel ban on Hubei province, but still allows international travel, allowing the new disease to spread around the world. And the lockdown that eventually came in Wuhan, we thought, well, that's the way a communist country works. They lock people inside. They force you to do things against your will. They'll drag you out of your apartment if they have to. But that would never happen in the West, where we value liberty and we value freedom. Most people were appalled, I think, and sickened by what China was doing back in January, but not the mainstream media.
China has had enormous success in beating down its epidemic. We see the drone shots from these cities and we think, ooh, lockdown, it looks terrible, there's no traffic on the street. That's not the point of what they did. They had to do that in order to introduce the measures they were going to take that were actually going to fight the epidemic. So people were literally quickly taken away from their families to these giant gymnasiums or stadiums where they were not concentration camps. They were beds, you know, there, and there were nurses in protective gear to watch out for people. They even had dance classes in these things. It's not a bad policy.
It seemed jealous of the power that China had to be able to control people's lives in this way. And in just a few months, the nations that we thought valued freedom started to do exactly what we saw in Wuhan. January 31st, Brexit finally happens. 4 years after the Brexit vote on June 23rd, 2016, the United Kingdom is no longer a part of the European Union. And personally, I thought this was the end of it, but apparently they still had to make a deal, and we'll get to that at the end of the show. And this entire year, along with COVID, was also consumed, at least in Britain, with the UK and Europe trying to make a deal. On January 31st, President Trump becomes the first leader of a major nation to impose a travel ban on incoming flights from China. And at the same time, Joe Biden said that that move was xenophobic. It was targeting Chinese. Many Democrats were encouraging people to travel and, you know, to visit Chinatown and to just go on as normal.
The risk to New Yorkers for coronavirus is low.
This should not stop you from going about your life, should not stop you from going to Chinatown and going out to eat. I'm going to do that today myself.
Come to Chinatown. Here we are. We're, again, careful, safe, and come join us.
The Department of Sanitation is ready for Mardi Gras 2020.
There's very little threat here. This disease, even if you were to get it, basically acts like a common cold or flu.
On February 4th, President Trump gave his State of the Union address. It was delayed because of the impeachment trial. This is the speech that Nancy Pelosi ripped up at the end. She later said she didn't believe there was a single true statement in that entire speech, when most of the speech was dedicated to fallen soldiers in the United States military. She stood up in front of the entire country and ripped it in half. And these are the people that are calling for civility. These are the people that say President Trump is breaking norms. February 6th, President Trump is acquitted by the Senate, ending the impeachment charade. And I would just note how odd it is to impeach a politician in an election year, when you can let the people decide with their vote 8 or 9 months later, or at least we thought people would be allowed to decide 8 or 9 months later. By late February, the Dow Jones Industrial Average surges to a record high, an all-time record high. This is the resurgence. This is President Trump's economy. It is booming. And when you go back and listen to these clips at the time, Democrats know they're in trouble. They know that he is surging in popularity. People admit that they're better off. Their standard of living is better off than it was 4 years earlier. They're making more money. The economy is surging. President Trump is fulfilling his promises. In March, we experience the Democrat primaries on March 3rd. There's Super Tuesday. And on that day, Joe Biden suddenly surges ahead in the Democrat Party. Bernie Sanders, he had just won the Iowa caucus. He won the primaries in New Hampshire and Nevada. And those are the states that generally would signal who the people want to be their nominee. Bernie Sanders won in those three states overwhelmingly, but by March 3rd, Super Tuesday came, and Joe Biden suddenly pulls ahead. If you'll remember, President Obama starts making his phone calls. I think it was NBC that wrote about Obama's quiet hand in selecting Joe Biden. Now, initially, we know that he wanted Kamala Harris, and I'll just note that Kamala Harris dropped out of the race in December 2019, but she still appeared on the primary ticket in a few states. She appeared on the ticket in Arkansas and New Hampshire, and she received a total of 844 votes. 844 people decided to vote for her, compared to, I think it was 19 or 20 million that wanted Bernie Sanders. And we now know that Kamala Harris has been ramrodded right into the position to where she can be best suited, essentially, to be president of the United States. But I bring that up to mention to you that she was probably the least popular candidate. I think Beto O'Rourke might have done a little worse than she did. But President Obama wanted it, and he made sure it got done. By mid-March, we arrive at the corona madness. In the middle of March, Italy starts to see hospitals in its northern region become overwhelmed. It decides that the best way to handle this is to do exactly what it saw China do in Wuhan, and they institute a national, well, at first it was a regional lockdown, and then it expanded to a national lockdown. And from that point on, the rest of the world began convulsing. The UK soon followed suit on March 16th. The United States followed after that. You'll remember, it was 15 days to slow the spread. Just 15 days. Stay inside for 15 days. Don't go to work for 15 days. Try to avoid your family for 15 days. And we are 9 months since that point. The United Kingdom and the United States, they were close to avoiding the lockdowns until the infamous Neil Ferguson report, that imperial report, came into number 10 Downing Street, that said 2.2 million Americans would die and 500,000 British would die if lockdowns similar to what we saw in China were not imposed. The New York Times called the imperial the gold standard. It wasn't so much what they were saying, but who was saying it. That surging economy in February, the Dow Jones at the highest it's ever been, takes a massive nosedive. Social distancing becomes the new face of the government.
It was a pretty day.
In April, we see lockdown mania, insane rules in certain U.S. states. In Michigan, they're telling you what you can and can't buy at stores, what's essential, what's non-essential. They did that in the United Kingdom. In France, you had to carry paperwork if you wanted to go outside, explaining why you needed to go out and what you were going to do. We saw cities shut down, completely shut down. After a while, lockdown protests began to emerge in America. One in particular was in Lansing, Michigan, when protesters stormed the Capitol building, and the media responded to that as though it was a violent overthrow. It was horrible what those protesters were doing, invading the Capitol building, putting lives at risk.
Watch these images.
Really just an ugly, a dangerous scene at the state capitol in Michigan.
As we look at this extreme group.
They're not protests.
These quote-unquote protests. I don't even think that that's the right word, because protests are supposed to be peaceful.
I'm not embarrassed to say that I was afraid.
It's not clear what they're demanding. Demanding to infect other people, demanding to make other people sick.
Who do you think you are? I don't understand what is wrong with people. Stay at home.
By May, the United States passed the largest stimulus package in world history, $3 trillion as a relief package because of these insane lockdowns. And just as social distancing, just as face masks are becoming the new norm that they tell us we all have to abide by, in just a moment, social justice then trumped social distance. On May 25th, George Floyd was killed by Minneapolis police. Suddenly, cities began burning thanks to peaceful protesters.
I want to be clear in how I characterize this. This is mostly a protest. It is not, generally speaking, unruly.
That ain't a riot, what we're seeing right now in Minneapolis.
You know, Brooke, I think this is a march, really.
As they're coming off, it's peaceful. They're saying peaceful protest.
People are risking COVID to explain to this country that we're fed up.
Thank goodness for the looters, man.
Any reasonable person would say we shouldn't be destroying other people's property, but these are not reasonable times.
Please, show me where it says that protests are supposed to be polite and peaceful.
The city of Minneapolis was charred in just a few days, well, at least one portion of that city. The mayor of Minneapolis, Jacob Frey, he told the police to stand down. He told them to abandon police precincts. The optics of holding the building, they weren't as important as making sure everyone was safe. Those police precincts were then burned. And the media maintained that these were peaceful protests in the name of social justice. The riots quickly spread to other U.S. cities. We saw mass looting in New York City. We saw massive protests in Atlanta, Los Angeles, Chicago. During the summer, nearly every mid to large-sized city in the United States experienced some sort of rioting. Not a protest, a riot. Looting. Vandalism. Portland became a war zone for over 100 days. We saw autonomous zones established in the city that the mayor refused to do anything about. Not long after George Floyd's death, there was the police shooting of Rashard Brooks in Atlanta, triggering more riots. June and July became months of hate and riot in the United States. And conveniently, coronavirus took a break for those few months so that people could go out and riot. What was a greater pandemic, from what they said, racism was a greater pandemic than COVID. They had to go out on the streets. Mayor de Blasio, after months of forcing businesses to close, forcing people to stay inside. He had to get out on that street and paint Black Lives Matter in front of Trump Tower without wearing his mask, mind you. And that was after Governor Cuomo said that you could literally kill people if you don't wear a mask.
You could literally kill someone because you didn't want to wear a mask.
At the same time, we're getting a clearer picture of the nursing home massacre that happened in New York City. Governor Cuomo's edict to put COVID-positive patients back into nursing homes where the majority of deaths occurred. During these same riots, we saw America's history come under attack. Statues of America's founders, Jefferson and Washington come under attack, then Abraham Lincoln, then Theodore Roosevelt, vandalized, defaced, torn down illegally. We saw large department stores broken into, millions and millions of dollars lost due to looting, fear and violence, blood on the streets of the United States. Black Lives Matter begins forcing people to kneel and atone for what they call their whiteness. Cancel culture goes on a rampage. Kneeling becomes ubiquitous.
Bring you on your knees because you have white privilege. So if they see that a white
we saw
person getting on their knees,
cancel culture take hold. If you didn't agree with the movement, you would lose your job or you'd be forced to sell your business. If you didn't kneel, if you didn't raise your fist, you were attacked. Free speech didn't matter. Your rights didn't matter. You had to bow to the mob. By the end of July and into August, we see the riots slowly wind down. The focus shifts back to the impending second wave of COVID. The Sunbelt states in America see cases rise. At the same time, Democrats insist that Donald Trump is trying to rig the election through the United States Postal Services. He is destroying the vote or the sorting machines. He's removing post office boxes from the streets so that people can't send in their mail and vote because of the pandemic. At that same time, many Democrat-led states have or were making illegal changes to state elections in violation of state laws. They wanted to expand mail-in voting illegally. They wanted to provide Dropbox locations for ballots. They made ballot harvesting allowed or legal as they saw it. They expanded early voting. Many states extended the deadline past election day to get your ballot in. We see the stage being set for the steal on November 4th. After that tumultuous summer, that chaotic summer in the United States, the world watching as the cities of the superpower begin to burn, on August 4th, there's the explosion at the port in Beirut. A hangar filled with ammonium nitrate, thousands and thousands of tons of ammonium nitrate, caught fire and triggered what looked like a small nuclear blast in that city on the port on the coast in Lebanon. The Trumpet wrote, at the time, a pressure wave instantly flattened nearby buildings, flipping cars, and blowing out every window in Beirut. The resulting shockwaves, equivalent to a 3.5 magnitude earthquake, were felt more than 150 miles away on the island of Cyprus. 2,700 metric tons of ammonium nitrate had combusted in a flash. By comparison, 2 tons of ammonium nitrate were used in the 1995 Oklahoma City bombing, making the Beirut blast almost 1,000 times more powerful. It was the equivalent to 500 tons of TNT, one of the largest non-nuclear explosions in history. Following that event, the government of Lebanon resigned. There were anti-government riots that ensued. Everyone wanted to know why was all of that explosive material left in that warehouse? Where did it come from? Why was it left there. And at this stage, we see the Prime Minister of France, Emmanuel Macron, enter the city of Beirut, and he's treated like a savior to those people, by those people. And we see that trend. That's Psalm 83. That's the Holy Roman Empire moving in to those countries, those moderate countries in the Middle East. A dramatic, dramatic event in Lebanon. Just a week or two after that, there's the police shooting of Jacob Blake in Kenosha, Wisconsin. The population of Kenosha is 100,164. It's a mid-size American town. The riots that ensued in that little city would make the entire nation tremble. The Democrat governor of Wisconsin will not allow President Trump to send in the National Guard to help protect people, to help protect businesses. And what ensued was Antifa taking to the streets, charring buildings, burning businesses to the ground. The police are nowhere to be seen. Armed members of the public are forced to defend their businesses. There's the incident with Kyle Rittenhouse, who came under attack and fired his gun, killing his attackers. The media portrayed that as an unprovoked mass shooting by a far-right militia member. We again saw blood spilling on America's streets in a relatively small city in the United States. And if it can happen there, it could happen anywhere in America. And it's after that riot in Kenosha, and then we see another small one in Rochester, New York. And people don't like to see their businesses burned down. They've been shut down because of COVID, and now they're seeing the leaders of their cities allow their businesses to be burned to the ground. Finally, the media changed tune. The peaceful protests tune has to go. They admit that they have to acknowledge that these are violent protests, and they kept coming up with the stats. Well, 94% of the protests in the summer of 2020 were peaceful, so that just means 6% were violent. And they couldn't condemn it, because then they would write after that, well, the overwhelming majority of protests were peaceful. Well, the 6% did a lot of damage. And just like any disease, it's like saying, you know, well, just 1% of the cells in your body are cancer cells. The majority of your body is perfectly healthy, but that 1% of cancer, well, you could just ignore that. 6-7% of the protests were violent. They finally have to admit it. And what changed? Why did they change? Did they have this sudden moral awakening because they realized that, well, throwing a tantrum and burning a city down to get your way is not what adults do? Did they finally come to terms with how lawless that tactic is? How destructive it is to the country? No, why did the Democrats change their tune? Why did they finally admit that there was a violent protest? Well, let Don Lemon explain.
The rioting has to stop. Chris, as you know and I know, it's showing up in the polling. Mm-hmm. It's showing up in focus groups. It is the only thing right now that is sticking.
The riots are hurting us in the polls. It's a political decision. People don't like when we burn the cities down. We've got to stop or we're going to lose the election. Early September, record wildfires on America's West Coast, many of them related to cases of arson. Skies across Northern California and Washington State look apocalyptic. Lockdowns then begin to pick up again as the fall months approach. Coronavirus cases slowly start to rise in some states. On September 15th, Trump signs a historic peace deal or brokers a historic peace deal between Israel, Bahrain, and the United Arab Emirates. He's nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize. He'd broker another one in a month or two after this between Israel and Sudan. Major, major deals that the media completely ignored and maintained that President Trump, you know, he is supposed to be the warmonger. He is supposed to be Adolf Hitler. And here he is signing these peace deals between nations that have been enemies for decades. Now, obviously, under the light of Bible prophecy, we know how those peace deals will result, that is a wound for Israel. But look at how much hatred the media have for President Trump, that he achieved something they said could not be done. John Kerry said it could not be done without the Palestinians. And here come these Arab nations willing to work with Israel. On September 18th, Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg dies. A dramatic event just 6 weeks before the election. An election that most people already know is going to come down to decisions that are made by the Supreme Court. There cannot be eight justices. Everything will end up as a 4-4 tie. So we now have a Supreme Court battle just 6 weeks before the election. And then peppered throughout these next couple of months, we see small, relatively small terrorist attacks throughout Europe. The office of Charlie Hebdo, they were the target of a terrorist attack in 2015 in Paris. There's another terrorist attack outside their office on September 25th. There's the beheading of a school teacher in broad daylight in a suburb of Paris. There's a knife attack at a French church. There's 27 people shot in a terrorist attack in Vienna. These are the jewels of the Holy Roman Empire, Vienna, Paris. On October 2nd, President Donald Trump tests positive for coronavirus and is admitted to Walter Reed Medical Center. On October 5th, Donald Trump leaves Walter Reed Medical Center. He appears to be just fine. And then he goes and he enrages the media with the October 6th tweet where he says, "Don't be afraid of COVID. Don't let it dominate your life." And the media's response, "You must be afraid." I remember President Trump stepped out on the balcony at the White House. I think the nearest person was 100 feet away, and he took off his mask, and they turned the cameras away. They said, "We can't show that. He's going to kill people by doing that in front of the cameras, because then everyone else is going to think they can take their masks off when they're 100 feet away from people." Insanity. By mid-October, the Hunter Biden scandal is blown open with a Senate report that shows that Hunter Biden took money from the former First Lady of Moscow, the Russians. He took $3.5 million from her, or received a payment of $3.5 million. His businesses in China come under intense scrutiny. Tony Bobulinski, a business partner of Hunter's, a former business partner, he comes forward and blows the whistle on the Biden family crime ring, and no one will interview him, except he finally gets one interview with Tucker Carlson, which he was pressured to not do. The media call the entire episode Russian disinformation. They insist there is no scandal. And here we see the media interfering in the election by protecting Joe Biden.
This whole smear on Joe Biden comes from the Kremlin. That's been clear for well over a year now.
There are these issues with the Bidens that are absolutely invented, imagined.
A series of lies peddled them by Rudy Giuliani.
Last week, Giuliani and former Trump official Steve Bannon provided the New York Post with unverified emails.
Every major national, international, and local news operations looked into it has said it's a lie. operation looks right out of the Kremlin playbook.
Kremlin constructed anti-Biden propaganda campaign.
50 high-level intelligence agents, people who have worked in the intelligence agencies, came out and said that this is most likely Russian propaganda.
As you know perfectly well, I'm a journalist and a reporter, and I follow the facts. And there has never been any issues in terms of corruption.
And he's in the midst of a scandal.
He's not.
And he's taking...
He's
of course
not.
He is,
no.
Leslie.
Come on.
Of course.
On October 27th, Amy Coney Barrett is confirmed under the Supreme Court, giving conservatives a 6-3 advantage. And in reality, it's actually a, a 5-4 advantage, because Justice Roberts is probably more liberal and left-leaning than even the liberal justices that sit on the bench. And then just a few days after that, we experienced the November 3rd, November 4th fraud, the greatest fraud ever perpetrated on the American people. President Trump appeared to be on his way to another victory, and then the mail-in ballots came rolling in. Some vote counting stations went home for the night. They stopped counting. They said they'd return the next day after they see the results from the other counties. Over the next few days, we saw President Trump's massive lead in Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Georgia, and Michigan all evaporate. He'd go on to lose Arizona and Nevada. None of this was settled on Election Day. They had plenty of days to make sure that they got the numbers right. And we'd been conditioned to think that this was normal. We were conditioned for the red mirage that President Trump would appear to be ahead, and then the mail-in ballots would be counted. And that's when all of the real votes would come in, and we'd see that Biden would win overwhelmingly. On that night, we saw Fox News fall to the radical left. The day after that, this event didn't get a lot of attention. Ethiopia descends essentially into a civil war. There are attacks in a northern state or province. Dozens of people are beheaded. On November 4th, the United Kingdom enters a month-long lockdown. It says that this will be the last lockdown. We won't do it again. This will lift on December 4th. Then on November 7th, 4 days after the election, in perfect unison, the media coronate Joe Biden as president-elect. America had never experienced anything like this. To see the delay on election night, to have the media lied to by officials in many of these counties on where these ballots came from and when they would be counted, the media didn't seem to care because they've got their man across the finish line. Lawsuits ensued in battleground states. Judges won't hear cases. No one makes a judgment on the merits of a case. They're all shot down due to technicalities. Meanwhile, the fraud continues to be uncovered by President Trump's legal team. And then slowly and slowly, we see more Republicans that won their elections because they rode in on President Trump's coattails, more Republicans start to turn on Donald Trump. Well, you can't overturn the Electoral College. You can't overturn with the state legislatures. The deadline is passed. Just let the fraud happen. Now, November 13th, 9 days after the election, Chris Krebs, the director of Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, he's responsible for making sure that there aren't any problems in the election. And 9 days after the election, he's done a thorough report. And I just read a bit more about his agency today. Do you know how many employees they have? 132. And there had been 4 Inspector General reports written about that agency and how understaffed they were leading up to the election. They complained that 130 people were not enough to manage election problems in 8,000 separate voting jurisdictions in the United States. But 9 days after the election, the head of that agency said The November 3rd election was the most secure in American history. Case closed. Chris Krebs said it. They did it. Give yourself a pat on the back. On December 7th, Supreme Court Justice Alito agrees to hear a case brought on by the state of Texas. Hundreds of Republican congressmen sign on to the case. More than 20 Republican states join the suit with Texas. President Trump hops on board. This is the one they'd been waiting for. 4 days later, the Supreme Court denies standing. Didn't make a judgment on the merits of the case, based it on a technicality. No one will confront the fraud. A few days later, suddenly the media turn on Joe Biden as if they thought, you know, his victory was sealed. Then the dam breaks and we learn all about the Hunter Biden scandals. We learn that Hunter Biden was under investigation by three federal districts in the United States for 2 years for tax fraud. And CNN this time actually reports it.
And we are back with breaking news in our 2020 lead. Moments ago, President-elect Joe Biden's son Hunter announced that the U.S. attorney in Delaware has notified his lawyer that the U.S. attorney has investigated Hunter Biden's taxes. And Evan, what more do we know about this U.S. attorney's investigation?
Jake, we know that this is an investigation that began as far back as 2018. In the recent months, it had been put on hold as a result of Justice Department rules that require, politically sensitive investigations to sort of go at least on pause so as not to interfere with the election.
Remember what they said before the election. We are journalists. There is nothing here. We don't need to look into it. That's the media that want you to listen to them, that speak to you like they're the authority on a subject. It was a blatant lie. We learn about China's infiltration into the West. Documents leak from the Chinese Communist Party that there are more than 2 million CCP members buried in Western companies and government organizations. Later, we learn that U.S. Congressman Eric Swalwell had been compromised by a Chinese spy. This happened years ago, and they didn't say anything about it. Swalwell was guilty of everything he accused President Trump of doing. In the United Kingdom, they say there won't be any lockdown coming into the holidays. 4 days after they say that, they suddenly discover a new variant of COVID, and they decide without evidence that This variant is more transmissible than the first, and they put the entire southeast of England into a newly invented Tier 4 lockdown. So technically, it's not another lockdown. They just created another tier. The port of Dover is closed. France won't let any trucks into its country from the UK. Imports and exports are backlogged. Another run on food stores. Just a taste of the siege that's coming, a taste of the animosity between Britain and the Holy Roman Empire. The United States Congress signed off on a $2 trillion plus, well, I don't think we actually know the exact amount, another spending bill, and this one was labeled Emergency Relief Package, $600 for every American. This will get you through the crisis. This will get you through the lockdowns, and you being forced to close your business. President Trump vetoes the bill. The same day, we find out that Israel can't pass a budget, triggering another election that's fourth in 2 years. It has been an eventful year. It has been a chaotic year. And I realize that when I give this show, there are still 7 days left of this year, so anything could happen between now and 2021. So we are leaving it on a cliffhanger. We don't know, well, as far as the United States is concerned, we don't know who the next president is going to be. We obviously do if we're familiar with Bible prophecy. But again, I want to emphasize that these events are not going to slow down. The foot is not going to be taken off the gas pedal. It is accelerating. There's no going back to pre-2020. There's no putting, you know, the communist cat back in the bag once they let it out. These edicts, once they have that power, it will only get worse and worse. Where are we in Bible prophecy? We are living in the last days. Again, I want to refer you to that article, that reprint. Are we living in the last days? Meditate on these events. Meditate on how they impact you, how it changes your thinking, how you should act on these events. I would say this year, we saw world news, you know, jump off of our computer screens and our televisions, and it came to the streets outside of our homes. It came into our homes in many places. We've seen massive invasions of privacy. We've seen rioting in small towns in America. We've seen, you know, social distancing and these face masks and all of these events and these rules. It has changed our lives. And how are you going to respond? Another article I want to refer you to, and I would say the entire next issue of The Trumpet, or the latest issue of The Trumpet, Why Donald Trump Will Remain America's President. Read that article. Study that article. Get that in your mind and remember where you read that first and why The Trumpet produces that, why Mr. Gerald Flurry wrote that article. And when you see these events intensify, go back to The Trumpet. Use that really as your primary news source. If anything has been on display this year, it has been the utter uselessness of the media. I would say beyond useless. They are part of making the problem worse. So I will leave the program there. Again, like I said, it's a cliffhanger. There's 7 days left of this year. But again, I'll refer you once more to Are We Living in the Last Days and Why Donald Trump Will Remain America's President. I believe there will be a substitute for the program tomorrow, possibly on Monday, and then Mr. Stephen Flurry should be back on Tuesday. Thank you for joining us on today's show. If you have any comments, you can send those to td@kpcg.fm.